Last time in part one.
Please welcome to the locker room, Mr. Matt Murphy.
Because it probably would have freaked me out at the start.
You know, innovator, disruptor, strategic, realist, visionary.
I think it doesn't matter what discipline you come from, if you've got the right mindset. Most people do it, they don't think they do it. You've got to be able to look at yourself in the mirror and know that you're doing the right thing.
So how big a part, if any, of over your entire career, I guess, has imposter syndrome been a thing, or have you managed to avoid that?
It was hard when I changed industry, actually, to go from healthcare into the video games industry. I had to consult my eldest brother about it because he'd moved industry. Because of the nature of his job, he'd worked across a lot of industries. And he gave me the confidence to do it. You know, he sort of gave me the nudge to do it, if you like. And when you start out, that's quite tough because you know nothing of that domain. I didn't know anything about that. You know, I was a gamer in the 80s, but I wasn't a PlayStation or Xbox kid or anything. So, I was like an old school gamer, but I was interested in it. And so what it encouraged me to do was listen even more, I think. So I did that. That was a challenge, but again, the people help you through that. I think it's not a bad thing to have a bit of imposter syndrome, because then it just makes you aware of your behavior and, but ultimately, you've got to have some level of confidence. Like you can't shrink into the background. You've really got to go forwards. And I've thought this before. In hindsight, actually, when I changed industry, there are certain things that you take with you that you know to be that you're good at or that are true. And I wished I'd had a bit more confidence in those things if I could do it again, and then maybe that was a bit of imposter syndrome that stopped me from doing that. So you know if you go into a different sector, you know that certain things that are good practice regardless of the environment. It's just being able to stand by those things. There were a couple of decisions I thought if I did that again, I'd have stood my ground and done it, because I knew it to be the right thing. And maybe there was a bit of, I don't really know whether that's true here. And that was maybe a bit of underlying confidence due to it being a new environment that I should have just stuck with. So I think it's not a bad thing to have a bit of imposter syndrome. It's a bit like, you know, being nervous is a good thing, isn't it? Because it makes sure you're on your toes.
Well, I always think so personally, and I think you're right. If you can't kind of go through some of those periods and reflect back, and if it's always what you just said there really resonates in the, you kind of look back and you go, if I did it again, I'd stick to my guns on that one or whatever. And I think all you're doing is reinforcing all the good stuff that's gone before, and it all just adds flavor to your character and what you do next, I suppose, doesn't it?
Yes.
So you touched on the transition to gaming, and that was it is a very different move. What kind of, there's some very obvious differences between health tech and gaming. What parallels did you find? What, other than just that interest in the world, what kind of drew you to that?
So it was the business context that drew me to it. Like actually, when in pretty much every business that I joined for the last 15 years, and I've only worked at about four places, I think, in that time, but every one of them, I met the founders, and I was recruited by the founders, and so that helped me to sign up to the story, if you like, of the business, and I bought into that. And it's really important for me to buy into the journey of the business and the story of the business, because I need to know if I can get on board with that, if I can make a difference. Certainly as CEO, you've got to be able to go, can I make a difference to this? Am I interested in it? And so when I left EMIS, and we had a second child, was on the way actually, so I needed to get closer to home. And through a mutual contact, I met one of the founders at Gemba, which is the video games business. And I just immediately bought into them, bought into the story, and thought, okay, I've got to get my head around the industry. But it was a technology-based business, sort of understand those, you know, technology service-based business even better. And I like the founders. I like their story. There was opportunity. So I bought into that. And it was at the right end of the scale. So it was a scale-up business opportunity, which is what I wanted to do. I wanted to get involved in the investment cycle because I'd run a big business at EMIS. You know, I was running the biggest division, which was a big, really big business with lots of people. And I wanted to go smaller. So got into the world of VC and now in PE. So, you know, I was keen to do that and the fit was good. So, and then when I got into the sector, the biggest parallel is definitely the people. So it's because it's a creative industry and the UK punches way above its weight in the video games industry. There are some incredibly impressive people in the sector, particularly around the sort of game development side. So the creative skills and the production skills in that industry are amazing. But they're equally as passionate as the clinicians and non-clinicians in healthcare are about their industry and who they work for and what they do and why. So the strength of purpose is mega strong in video games and healthcare, I think. And I don't know, it might be the same in loads of other industries, but I don't really know those ones. But that was a parallel I instantly saw, is that everyone really is really into what they do. There's loads of chat and narrative about what people do because the video games are really entertaining, really interesting. People are just talking about the currency all of the time. Games, latest releases, new releases. Have you done this? This is happening, and it's like healthcare is similar, and everyone's always talking about it.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because obviously, you know, chunk of health tech on my own CV, and it is a really easy sell when you talk to people about what you do. You know, why do you get up in the morning? Why do you do what you do? Because you're helping to save or extend lives or make lives better for people with serious illness or whatever it might be, particularly in health tech. It's like falling off a log. You know, and you see that when people come to interview for roles, it's the easiest story in the world. And it is about finding that thing that people resonate with. I think in a very different context, you know, you're either a gamer or you're a parent to teenagers who game or whatever. Like you say, there's a natural link or an easy way of finding your place in that world. So it almost is not this alien landscape at all. It's just something we can all do. You pick up your phone, you play a game or a console or wherever it might be.
How many people do it. Amazing. Yeah. That was some of the things that immediately staggered me was the size of the market. I mean, it's bigger than all the other entertainment sectors put together. It's enormous. And most people do it. They don't think they do it. On your phone, you don't have to be on a PC gaming or on a console gaming. It can be on your phone. It could be like your Blummin' Zwift or your Wahoo, whatever, or in the gym and stuff. That's classed as gaming. You know, some of those are incredibly successful. So it's a great sector because it's enjoyable talking about it. I mean, it's the reality, isn't it?
No, it is. It is. But I think what's been interesting over the last couple of weeks, and I'm sure you picked up on it and stayed close to it, it seems to be, from a market perspective, all of the big games companies seeming to shed people at the moment. It seems to be a bit of a consolidation.
There was a lot of growth that happened during the pandemic because people were able to play more or were looking for home-based entertainment rather than going out. So there was a bit of a boom. But then at the flip side, I think production slowed down. So it meant that release of games became much slower and delayed, which was probably burning money on the development side. And so games not coming out quick enough can probably, well, can really damage businesses. So whether it was just scale up on demand and actually the production line of games has slowed down and has become more difficult in hybrid working and in a post-pandemic, more challenging. But I know it is incredibly sad to see the scale. I mean, what was the PlayStation was the latest one in the UK, wasn't it? It's incredibly sad. It's a lot of people's lives affected. The film and TV industry struggling as well, isn't it? I know there's strikes and things as background to that, but it's another creative industry that's really quite challenging at the moment, which is sad, desperately sad.
It is, you know, when you look at it, well, you can look at it on any number of levels, and we as society expect everything on demand, whether that's TV, like you say, all of our creative industries, we want to just be able to switch on, choose, download, stream, wherever, go. And do you think we've become too demanding as people, as consumers, or do you think we're right and actually the rest of the tech space to support that has to keep up?
It's a really good question. It's a really good question. Healthcare is really struggling at the moment to keep pace with demand, which has been exacerbated by the pandemic. And it can't adopt technology fast enough because it isn't, you know, there are a different set of dynamics. There's a different market. There's a different context, isn't there, to technology transfer and adoption, because you've got the patient safety, you've got governance. So there's it's a more complex world to adopt technology, but technology's got to be a big part of the answer. There's no other way. I don't think that we can, if you take health as an example, we can't afford to support, I don't think, in the old model of care, we can't afford to do it. I don't think there's enough budget to do it in the old traditional way, because I think public health is so poor and doesn't seem to be moving in the right direction that the demand's only going to keep going up. So we've got to find a different way to embrace technology to increase the capacity of healthcare to cope with the demand. It has to come from technology and adoption of technology. I would say that because that's what we do, but it has to, because it can't just be money. Can't be the answer. I think the old model of care is not sustainable, and without, you know, enormous pots of money, you're seeing now, and it's clearly not being funded appropriately. But the staff are just burnt out, and that's certainly in primary care. I can't speak for secondary care because I don't work in that space. But having dipped out for 6 years and come back in, that was the overwhelming observation. This workforce are just shattered and burnt out and confused and stressed. And so technology has got to play a role in alleviating that, because we're not all going to miraculously become healthier, and we're going to have to go less. It's getting worse. When you think about the volume of mental health consultations in primary care and the state of the mental health of our country, it's only going to increase, isn't it? So we've got to find a different way, and technology can be so important in that. And there's loads of amazing stuff that's coming out. There really is.
It's interesting, though, isn't it? Because that technology adoption is forcing some sectors out of its comfort zone, and the NHS being almost the perfect example, where back in the day, you know, going into surgery, you couldn't have anything below the elbow. Now there's wearables that actually aid tech. You can do surgery through microscopes from a different room and all the rest of it, but it's forcing industry or sectors outside of its comfort zones in order to adopt the level of technology to keep pace with demand. you know, generative AI is kind of the word you can't avoid. You must, if you hear it 20 times a day, it's probably quite a low end day that, and it is literally in everything we do. It's powerful, it's impactful, but some CIOs are moving away from the kind of the trendier adoption of tech in order to cement the foundations of what they deliver. Where do you stand? Gen AI, good thing, bad thing? Yeah, what's your view?
I think in the long term, it's a good thing. If I think about healthcare is not great at sort of leading edge technologies, and in my opinion, because certainly the NHS isn't. It's not geared up for that. It's geared up for solid, dependable, reliable technologies that a really diverse workforce can cope with, and the ultimate diverse customer base can cope with. So I don't think you might get, you know, in certain specialties, you will get, you know, bleeding edge technologies, whether it's sort of specialist surgery and even some sort of preventative diagnostic tools and things like that. I think it definitely has its use cases. I think within every sector, you know, there's elements of inefficiency within healthcare that would really benefit from it. There's elements of service delivery that would benefit from it, in terms of, you know, because there's RPA, robotic process automation, that is being trialed now, is being discussed a lot. There's I'm sure that some levels of patient engagement, you know, low, maybe high frequency, low impact could be done using smarter technology. But yeah, you just got to get the use cases right. And I think maybe other sectors will help to identify those that can then be applied into healthcare. I think there's so much risk around it, and the NHS is a very complicated market. It doesn't lend itself to technology adoption. It does in tiny pockets, but innovation spread is not good, because it's not set up that way.
Yeah, I think that's an important point though, isn't it? And it's not always been the case where we can kind of look across different sectors and take those learnings and be able to apply them, or be prepared or willing to apply them. And yeah, I think historically that's something that healthcare doesn't seem to have done particularly well, but it most definitely has to now if it's going to learn to adopt and to be able to move forward. It seems that all of us need to look at what works, what doesn't work. And I think those out on the bleeding edge, good luck to them, because, you know, they're doing it so we don't have to in other areas, I guess. But, you know, that kind of that fast following, that adoption is, I think, where the vast majority of businesses are, in order to protect themselves, protect their customers, and ultimately deliver right, whether that's through the technology or the service line, I guess. That's been really insightful. As a kind of last measure, what would you say that every aspiring leader or everybody wanting to be the next Matt Murphy, what's the one thing that you would recommend they had in their arsenal to succeed?
I would say humility. That sounds I don't want that to sound a bit sort of pompous, but having a good team means everything. I've had smarter people than me in those teams, better salespeople, you know, more innovative people, more determined people, better completer finishers, all of that. And I'm cool with that. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that you build a good team and you'll be all right, as long as you are fair and you look after them and you get them working together, you get them respecting each other. And I think that makes a good CEO. And then you just have to know when you need to show leadership from the front or show leadership from behind. And sometimes it takes different, you know, there is a time and a place for both of those strategies, but be aware of that. And I think that's why I say humility. I don't mean that to sound, you know, it's not misplaced. I'm saying that you need to know your place and their place. It isn't all about the super leader role, you know, the person that's got all the answers, that's in the hot seat, that has all the authority and all the power. I just don't think people respond to that personally.
I think that's a fantastic message to wrap this up on. There you go. Lessons for all of us, certainly lessons for aspiring leaders out there watching all of this. Some really, really good advice and insight there. Thank you, Matt. Thanks, everyone, for watching. Do get involved. Do leave your comments in all seriousness. You know, if there's any questions for Matt, we can get those over. I'm sure he'd love to hear your thoughts, see your opinions. Like, subscribe, hit all the buttons. Every 100 subscribers, we plant trees, remember. So if you're not going to do it for the us in the locker room, do it for the trees and the environment instead. Thank you very much for joining us. Until next time, we'll catch you later. Take care. Now, the bit about the Liverpool thing at the beginning, we'll cut that out. It's all right.
Sure. That's fine. Yeah, you can ask me that at the end of the season.